everybody, and welcome to another one in our long-running, but I hope enjoyable series of financial well-being podcasts. My name is David Lloyd. I am a writer. Well, am I still a writer, actually? Because I've recently been made unemployed by the BBC because I was writing for this program called Doctors for over 20 years, and they've axed it. So am I still a writer? Yes, I am, because I'm also writing a book. So, but I'm just a different sort of writer than the writer I used to be. I'm also an actor, a broadcaster, and I also host this podcast along with two other very important people. The first of whom, who am I going to make the most important today? I've got two very, very needy people looking at me on my little screen going, me, 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 make me the most important. And I think the neediest of all of those, Tom Morris.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very kind of you to introduce me like that. Tom Morris. I'm director and chartered financial planner over at Ovation Finance. I was thinking it's important to let you all know who sponsors this pod and you know who gives me the time to jump onto this. It's the same company that Chris founded back in, 2000 and went employee-owned in 2018, which is 6 years on. It's remarkable how quickly that has passed. So yeah, there's my little bio.
And let's move on now to the equally needy and equally gorgeous Chris Budd.
Good morning, David. Thank you for that. So I wrote the original Financial Wellbeing book, founded the Institute of Financial Wellbeing, and I've got something exciting that I want to just tell you about, if you'll allow me a minute or two.
You're allowed.
It's called the Financial Wellbeing Pulse, something I've been working on for a little while now, and it's out. It's actually out. The idea is it's a way of measuring your relationship with money. At the moment, it's only available through financial advisors. So if you're a financial advisor listening to this, get in touch. I'll give you an email address in a bit. If you're a non-financial advisor, a normal person, for want of a better phrase, ask your financial advisor about it and say, please, can you sign up to the Financial Wellbeing Pulse? The idea is that the advisor sends the client a link. That link accesses a series of questions, a survey, if you like. They complete that. It takes about 30 questions, takes about 10 minutes. I've done it myself. It took me about 7 minutes. So they're quite intuitive questions. And then you get two things. You get a score. Your financial well-being is 55%. And you get a short report explaining what that means. The advisor gets a copy of that report, so the client, when they go to see the advisor, can now discuss their relationship to money and maybe start to just investigate a little bit where it could be improved and what impact that would make. A year later, or whenever the next planning meeting happens, the process happens again and the client gets a new score. Your financial well-being is 65%. So now the advisor can say, we have increased your financial well-being by 10 percentage points, which has happened as a result of our advice, which means that the firm who can gather this data and on a dashboard across all their advisor and all their clients can use this in their marketing. We increase the well-being of our clients on average by 10%. They can give it to the FCA, the regulator, for what's called consumer duty purposes, showing the impact of their advice. It's dead simple, dead cheap, but I'm hoping we'll have a big, big impact.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating. And are the questions the same every time, or do they change the following year, or are they the same question?
No, great question, David. They're the same. Very important, so we get consistency of those results. The strength of the pulse is that it's been developed by academics. It's in conjunction with an organisation called Centre for Thriving Places, who've been measuring well-being for years. It uses their core set of questions for general well-being, and we developed with them and also a guy called Dr. Tom Mathar, who's going to be on this podcast soon, of Aegon. We have also developed a new set of questions specifically around money and happiness, which we've added on to the Centre for Thriving Places general set of questions. So it's the academic rigour that this has all been produced with is its main feature, as far as I'm concerned. The main feature for most advisors and firms, I think, will be the simplicity with which you can use it.
Well, if you're a financial advisor and you're not already clamoring for this financial well-being pulse, then I suggest you should be. I'm seriously, Chris, that sounds like a very simple but a quite genius idea in terms of measuring and calibrating all the things that we've been talking about on this podcast for the last 8 years.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm hoping it will have a big impact. The website, if people have a look, is called financialwellbeingpulse.com. And then if you're interested, there's a you can register your interest. Obviously, this podcast will be going out in a few weeks after we're recording it. So I'm hoping by then there will be a demo that you can try. It might even be the whole thing is live, but certainly the website is live right now. So people can go and have a look and either register their interest or have a go.
Great. Tomo, are you going to be using that at Ovation?
We are. We're part of the, what do you call it, beta phase or trial
soft
phase?
Launch.
Soft launch. So we Chris obviously introduced this to us quite a while ago, the concept, and we were like, yeah, let's go for it. So we're very keen to embrace it. So yeah, David, watch this space.
Well, excellent. I look forward to filling out the questionnaire. Send it to me as soon as it's up and running. Mm-hmm. And we'll see where my financial well-being sits.
That yeah, it makes me a little nervous, yeah. Doesn't it?
0%.
Yeah. Like, oh, God, all
official,
that effort.
Official status, miserable. I don't think that will be the case at all. Great. Well done, Chris. Another innovation for Ovation. It's never ending. Right.
I should just add something that this has also been developed. So there's three organisations. I mustn't miss out. So Centre for Thriving Places and AGAN, and also the Institute for Financial Wellbeing helped develop this as well.
Great. Okay. We look forward to hearing more from that, and I'm sure we will in a future podcast. So never mind future podcast. What's on today's podcast, Chris?
Well, today, David, we're going to look at a very interesting subject of perception. I'll tell you a bit more in the introduction about why we're looking at this, but it might sound like initially an odd thing to talk about in relationship to money, but actually it's got huge relevance.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to that. But before we move on to that wide-ranging conversation, as I'm sure it will be, let's have this episode's Tight Ass Tomo tip. As you know, every episode of this podcast features sound financial advice from Tom Morris, who's an absolute expert, may I use the word genius, at saving us all money. Before we move on to him, Chris, have you got anything to share with us this week at all?
Yeah, I will actually. So last time I mentioned my mum, who, Meanie Maureen, as you called her, who died just over a year ago. And
Hang on, should we establish Meanie Maureen about the way that she's tight with money? We need to establish and make sure it's not a character assassination.
That's very true. Yes, thank you, Tom. But she did something that was really, really positive. Really good, which is she used to squirrel away little pots of money. So she would put a quid here, a few quid there, into five or six different pots, so that when it came time for, I don't know, going on holiday, she had some money to give to us kids for spending money. Or it could be that when the boiler broke down, she had a little bit of money squirreled away. My dad was terrible with money. He'd spend it like, you know, whatever the analogy is. Whereas mum would just kind of, before he knew it, would just put some money away. Now, this is actually a behavioural bias, which has a name. It's called mental accounting. And it's a really positive and useful thing. And you can use it now with things like if you were to set up separate bank accounts and call that bank account something specific. So emergency fund is absolutely essential. Everybody should try and put some money in an emergency fund. Call it the emergency fund. It's only for emergencies. Or if you're saving up for holiday, call that your holiday fund. My mum used to do this literally with jam jars and put coins in them, but you can still do it now. It's called mental accounting, and it's a really positive way to get financial well-being.
Excellent. Tomo, what's the big one this week?
It's a practical one again. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. This came, and I always like to give credit to how it came about. And this one came from, again, I think like last episode, a friend of mine and Chris's, a chap called Colin Lowe. He's a well-traveled man, is Colin. And he put us on to this website called easysim.global. And what this enables you to do is when you go and travel, it's expensive to use your mobile phone and use data. And he was traveling to the States recently, and he bought a SIM, buy a package. It's various options on the website. So you can buy some data, it's a fixed price, say like 30 quid, and that's it. Rather than using your mobile data that you have in the UK that could be really expensive, he uses this. And that's how we traveled around without worrying about any roaming charges and getting hit by a really expensive mobile phone bill. So yeah, easysim.global if you're traveling abroad.
Well, A very good tip, that one. And it may not be very funny, but it'll save us money. And that's the whole point of the podcast, isn't it?
Is it, though? Oh, I feel so guilty about actually practical, useful tips these days.
Tomo, I'm speaking at the Financial Therapy Association conference in San Diego in May. So this is great. What's it called again?
It's called EasySim.Global. It looks like it's part, you know, the EasyJet group. Looks like it's part of that. But yeah, if you're, you could buy 5 gigabytes for 13 quid. It's remarkable value. Remarkable value.
Chris, you must report back, A, on your fantastic trip to San Diego. That's very exciting. But also, you know, get that SIM, see if it's actually saved you any money, and then come back on a future podcast and tell us all about it. And if any of the listeners at home have got any of your own money-saving tips, we're always very keen to see them. You can either email into us or you can tweet us on Twitter or X, as I believe it's called now, and there's loads of other ways that you can get in touch with us, and they'll be all in the show notes at the very end of the episode. But now let's move on. Chris, let's get into this topic of perception. I'm intrigued. It's a very interesting subject, but I'm not sure how you're going to link it to our relationship to money or to financial well-being.
Blame Tammy, producer Tammy. She read a book called The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing by Al Rees and Jack Trout.
Oh, that old classic. It never leaves my bedside. I must have read that 100 times.
So one of the 22 laws in the book is the law of perception. And this line caught Tammy's eye. Truth and perception become fused in the mind, leaving no difference between the two.
Ah, now, one of the lines you've mentioned a few times over these podcasts is that beliefs are not truth. So are we in that space now?
I think so, because I had to think a little bit about what that line meant. On the one hand, we've got reality, the state of things as they actually exist. And on the other hand, we have perception, how we interpret how things exist. Truth, at least in the sense of the quote, sits on the perception side. In other words, it's our truth, not necessarily the actual truth.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a big relevance to money where truth and perception become fused, to quote the book. Naturally, I've not read it, as Chris knows.
I haven't read any book, have you?
Shush, no. Luddite, aren't I?
Tom, you know, can you actually read?
Debatable. Well, I'm reading a script right now, so how about that?
It's a Wizard of Oz moment, the curtain is drawn back.
I ad lib, obviously. So look, if we become convinced that something we perceive really is true, but that thing is not good for us, then this is what we call a self-limiting belief. And this is something we've spoken about before. If we hold a self-limiting belief about money, for example, that we always need more money to be happy, then this could be make us focus on trying to obtain more money rather than focusing on things that actually do make us happy. You know, so I can see how perception and money could be connected.
So having been given the challenge to look at the subject of perception, let's start by being clear what we're talking about when we use that word perception. I've obviously Googled it and got some definitions, and it's a process by which we take information from the world around us and organize that information in order to understand it. So each of us will organize that information in our own way through our own filters and values. Reality, on the other hand, is an absolute term that describes how things really are. So although our perception of the world around us will often be accurate, there will be times when our perception is, in fact, not reality.
Well, now we're getting into interesting philosophical territory here, because there are some philosophers who would argue that reality doesn't actually exist. I think it was Nietzsche who said that if a train is standing at a platform in a station, how do we know that its wheels are still there when we can't see them? And people would argue, well, clearly they're there because the train would collapse if the wheels weren't there. And Nietzsche said, well, how do we know that something else isn't happening, that those wheels disappear and some meaningless force that we don't understand comes and holds that train up? And people would go, well, we could go around there. We could see the wheels and prove that the wheels are holding the train up. And then Nietzsche said, well, yeah, but how do we know that the minute that we go and look at them, this strange, mysterious force disappears and the wheels come back? And he argued that we don't know things that we can't see, and everything is always up for interpretation. So reality, as we perceive it, doesn't actually exist because we all experience life in our own individual ways.
I don't wonder if the listeners are feeling this way. I certainly am. It feels like I'm in the middle of a Matrix film.
Look, I'm actually very open to this. So just touch on one thing, which I was discussing with some friends at the weekend who weren't having any of it, which is I'm quite tempted to become a member of the Flat Earth Society. Because, I mean, hear me out. Because the Flat Earth Society, if I'm reading it correctly, and you do have to read between the lines a little bit, but I don't think it's actually about believing that the Earth is flat, although they are adamant that that is what it's about. But I don't think it is. I think it's actually about a willingness to challenge and be open-minded. And I think that's quite healthy. So have a look at their website and see what you think. It's intriguing. Anyway, listen, we've establishing the principle.
Can I just establish the Financial Wellbeing Podcast does not believe that the Earth is flat. Please, and we're not sat here giving too much countenance to that. But I get your point, Chris. Sorry,
it's just trying to establish a principle that we should question things. Yeah, that what we think of as reality might not actually be real, which is not a bad way to go through life.
Yeah, but does this mean that we will always be wrong? I mean, if we can't always be right, then does that mean that we're always wrong?
Well, I think it depends whether the issue in question has one answer or allows for nuances of opinion. So you and I, David, would say that the Beatles are the best group ever. Tomo, on the other hand, might say that Oasis are better.
Well, he'd be wrong, obviously.
Well, of course he would. Without the Beatles, there would be no Oasis, right?
Boomers.
Is that all you can come back with, boomers?
That's all I got. That's my stock response, Chris. Hey, look, let's agree to disagree. The Beatles were your thing. The Oasis is mine. It's a generational thing.
No, I really like Oasis, but they're obviously not as good as the Beatles. But
exactly.
I think what Chris is saying is that our perceptions, whatever they might be, can be flawed.
Exactly. And what's interesting and what might help us to understand our own relationship with our finances is to understand how our perceptions might be flawed. What is going wrong in the process, and is it causing a problem?
Okay, right. I'm up for this. In fact, I'd like to go first, if I may. So one way in which our perceptions could be flawed is if we only rely on one source of information. So if Tomo were only to listen to Oasis and never experience the glory of the Beatles album Revolver or Sgt. Pepper's or many of the other great albums that they made, then his perception that Oasis are better would be understandable if that was his only term of reference.
Exactly. Yeah, great example. Let's take another example. Let's say someone is walking down a suburban street and they smell cut grass. Your perception would understandably be that there's a lawn nearby that's been mown. But in fact, it could be that there are other explanations. Someone might have dropped a bottle of fabric conditioner nearby, for example.
Okay, so if the person was only using one sense, that of smell, then that's what they would perceive and that's what they would understand. But if they use their ears maybe to hear the bottle smash and their eyes to see what had smashed, then they would have realised that the smell came not from the mowed lawn but from the dropped bottle of fabric conditioner.
Yeah, it's Matrix stuff, isn't it? Yeah, they were also relying on their previous experiences. You know, the smell of the cut grass is far more likely to be the cause than the bottle of the air freshener. Because of their previous experiences.
Yeah, but that's an assumption then, isn't it?
Mm.
And we've got to make assumptions in life, because without assumptions, we couldn't live. You know, we couldn't go about our daily life. If we looked around us to make sure that everything we smell is coming from what we expect it to come from, we wouldn't be able to function.
But looking at this from a different perspective, if instead of smelling cut grass, I smell gas, something in my brain immediately alerts me that there might be a problem. And if I smell something innocuous, on the other hand, well, I might not even notice it until somebody points it out to me.
So this is because our brains have only limited capacity. So we only pay attention to things that are important to us, and we build shortcuts in order to focus on essential things, either that we want or need or that are harmful to us. But if our attention, the things we choose to notice, the things that we perceive, that if our perceptions are too much on one thing, we might not notice something else that is actually more important.
Mm-hmm. So I remember seeing a documentary about how unreliable eyewitnesses are. They set up an experiment where a dozen or so people were told to jog around a park. And as they ran, they also needed to count their steps. The researchers pretended that they wanted to know how many steps each of them took. However, halfway round, the researchers had set up some actors to stage a mugging just to the side of the path they were running on. So the joggers each ran within 5 metres of someone being attacked at knife point, violently, by two muggers. So you'd think quite obvious that you spot it. But amazingly, when they went back to the researchers, not one of the joggers reported that they had noticed anything unusual. They were so busy concentrating on counting their steps that they didn't notice the mugging.
I once almost had an accident, David, you'll know, just by the cricket club that we coached kids at for many years. Opposite that, lots of lorries come out from the quarry. And a lorry came out in front of me once and obviously didn't see me. And I swerved and there's a telegraph pole. And I ended up literally an inch before the telegraph pole. Real, real close one. And I got out of the car and was really quite shaken. And I looked up the road and I recognised a car from one of our friends coming down the road. And I thought, oh, that's good. She'll stop. And she just drove straight past. And I thought, that's a bit rude, you know. And I saw her about a week later and I mentioned, you know, why didn't you stop? She didn't see me. I was up on the bank, on the curb of the side of the road, and it looked like I slammed into a telegraph pole. But whether she was listening to the radio or just concentrating on driving, she didn't even see me. So this is a phenomenon known as inattentional blindness, where we fail to notice something because we're distracted. Our brains use loads of these shortcuts and we don't even know we're doing it. Another example, there's a book called The Elements of Eloquence by Mark Forsyth, all about how to speak with a bit of a flourish. And there's a passage that went viral a few years ago, all about the order in which we use adjectives in front of a noun. This is quite fun. I really like this. I love words. So let's say you want to describe a pot. You might say that it's a coffee pot, or maybe you'd say that it's a green coffee pot, or a green Danish coffee pot. These adjectives must follow a certain order or we won't understand the sentence. The order that they must follow is this: opinion, size, age, shape, colour, origin, material, purpose, and then the noun.
Right, okay. Now, I think I've come across this before, but that's a lot to process, Chris. Can you say that again?
So let's... it's opinion, size, age, shape, colour, origin, material, purpose, noun. And if you don't get it in that order, your brains can't cope with it. So let's give this as an example. David, I'm about to send you a message with a description I want you to read out. And most importantly, don't read it first in your head. Just read it out straight away. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, I've sent it.
I've bought myself a lovely little old oval green Danish coffee pot.
Okay, now, Tomo, I'm sending you a message. Same thing, just read it straight out first time. Ready? It's gone.
I've bought myself a Danish little coffee oval old silver lovely pot.
So exactly
You're
the same word.
Talking nonsense, Morris.
I tried my hardest not to do that in a Bristolian accent then. Silver lovely.
So look, it's exactly the same words, but in a different order. And it becomes gobbledygook. Not only does that second arrangement of the words not make any sense, it's actually hard for Tomo to say it. So we do this complicated maneuver automatically without any conscious effort at all. As long as we all stick to the same system, we will interpret information in the same way. But as soon as we get information that breaks those rules, we're lost.
By the way, I think it's worth pointing out that the perception gap isn't always a bad thing. If I think I could do something I can't, this might encourage me to be aspirational and therefore to learn.
Wow. Very true.
Okay, I think a quick recap is in order, Chris, which is my way of saying it's time for you to get to your point.
please, yes. For the love of God, please.
So let me see if I've got this. There is reality, and then there is our perception of reality, and these two things are not always the same. Okay, I've got that. That's the perception gap. And this gap could be down to one or more of many reasons, such as assuming what has happened before will happen again, using only one source of information, being distracted and relying too much on systems that we develop without realizing it.
Bang on, bang on. So let's take a look at how our perception of the information around us when it comes to money doesn't always reflect reality.
Here it comes. I sense a point about to be made.
Okay, first, a quick reminder. Do you remember when we talked about set point theory from academic Sonia Lyubomirsky, which says that 40% of our long-term well-being is down to our intentional activity?
Mm-hmm. With 50% inherited, leaving only 10%, which is down to our circumstances, such as wealth.
So the really positive message from that is that we can affect our long-term well-being with our intentional activity. So let's bear that in mind and then look at how our perception gap when it comes to money can be changed. But accepting that we need to spend a bit of time on it. This is the sort of intentional activity, I think, that Professor Lyubomirsky was talking about.
Okay, so let's look at those reasons for a perception gap that we've identified and see what we might be able to do about them. We've got assumption, one source of information, distraction, and our brain's shortcuts. I think I've got that right. So let's begin with assumption. Let's turn to the man on the ground who sits in front of clients, helping them all day, every day. Tomo, what are the common assumptions that you hear clients making?
There are lots of things people think that they can't do when they first come to see us. That's a big assumption, is what they can't do. And they might say, I can't afford to do that. Or maybe I can't retire until I get the state pension. Some real common things that come up time and time again.
Yeah, and is that why they've come to see you?
Actually, no, not always, but very often they come for specific reasons, such as, you know, I've got these pensions, what should I do them? Or because they might have inherited some money. But once we start talking about their future, these limitations about their options start to reveal themselves. So we gently challenge their assumptions and often start to find that they might be able to do more than they thought they could do.
And how do you go about demonstrating that?
Well, this is a key thing about trying to break assumptions. Is that the right word to use? Quite aggressive, isn't it? Break assumptions is you've got to prove it. Well, that actually comes from the second cause of the perception gap that you listed, of only looking at limited sources of information. Now, quite often, for example, someone will receive their annual statement from their pension company, and it will show a projected pension income, and they conclude that they can't afford to retire on that. But there are other sources of information we could use, other options to consider. We could look to use other sources of income, or possibly downsizing, or changing jobs, or quite frankly, taking the pension in a very different way to that prescribed figure that they see on their statement. So there are lots of different bits of information that we need to consider, rather than just that one bit of information they've hung their hat on.
And that intentional blindness, the distraction comes in here as well. Could be the money distractions that are around us, whether that be social media, advertising, or those lovely records that we might want to buy. That might be just me, I admit.
But there's that kind of example for everyone, right? And it's often just as simple as the fact that we're just so busy getting on with our daily lives that we don't look up. I'm a financial advisor by profession, but I've got a young family. My head's down getting through the daily life and making sure everybody is stays alive. But that's why engaging someone else can be so helpful. You know, it helps us to challenge our assumptions and create more options.
And of course, having financial options is one of the five pillars of financial well-being. And I'd also just say having a third party also kind of keeps you to the plan.
Absolutely. Yeah. Joe, just to cut in there, it might surprise people to know that I am the financial planner for other financial planners or others in financial services, because they will openly say it's just spotting some of those blind spots or some of the perceptions that might not be reality. I know, Chris, I'm sure you don't mind. You yourself, you know, were a financial advisor for an awful long time, and you engaged in financial advisor and planner. It's often doing the same thing, but you engaged in a financial planner as well, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We had our annual review meeting just the other day and asked me questions that, do you know, one of the things that happens when you as a couple sit in front of your financial planner is your partner says something that quite takes you by surprise. Mm. I would always recommend, if possible, that if couples, you know, if you do run your finances jointly, which not everybody does, but if you do, have your meeting together and talk about your future together and have challenging questions asked of you. They don't need to be aggressively challenging. It could just be, what's your plan for the next 5 years? And you might be surprised what the other person says.
Yeah, no, and I'll back that up as well. So myself and my partner, we do that. You know, with Tomo, we'll sit and we'll talk together. And sometimes, you know, I'll say something and she'll go, oh, really? I didn't know that you were thinking that way, or vice versa. But it's very, very useful to get those things out there. And and we touched on this, if you remember, in the very last podcast with Nick Elston, when he was talking about, for a whole variety of reasons, the benefits of getting third-party advice. And I think money is obviously really, really important. So this just leaves us with those shortcuts that the brain takes in order to handle the amount of information that it receives. And we've had a huge amount of information that we've tried to process in this podcast today.
So this is so we're trying to narrow this perception gap and the shortcuts. This is where we're going to come on to some of the behavioral biases that we've covered these before. We had Neil Beige has been on several times, and we had his Beige's biases. This is shortcuts that our brain takes, which were developed over millennia to keep us safe, but they can sometimes work against us.
Now, without going too deeply into this, can you remind us of one of those, Chris?
Yeah, let's take confirmation bias. It's quite a good one for this topic on perception gap. This is where confirmation bias, where we seek only information that confirms our current thinking. So somebody who might be left-leaning in their politics would tend to read the Daily Mirror, let's say. Somebody right-leaning in their politics might read the Daily Mail. And you're not going to get anything from either paper that's going to challenge your existing assumptions and how you think. So confirmation bias limits the information that we receive, which therefore maintains any gap that might exist between perception and reality.
Yeah, which comes back to why it's really important to have a third party helping you to make those big financial and life decisions.
Well, we've unpacked an awful lot in this conversation. It's been a very interesting philosophical and indeed metaphysical conversation. And I hope you've learned something from it yourselves. And I hope you'll be able to apply that to the way in which you work, as you, I'm sure, always do in increasing your financial well-being, which is why, of course, you listen to this podcast. And indeed, I hope that you will do that again the next time we release another one of these fascinating financial well-being podcasts.
If you want to be notified of upcoming podcasts, make sure you click the subscribe button. For more information on the topics discussed in today's podcast and to purchase a copy of the Financial Wellbeing book, please visit www.financialwell-being.co.uk. We'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas on financial wellbeing. You can send us an email at contact@financialwell-being.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter at FinWellbeing. Chris is Ovation Chris, and David is at Dave_Backwell. This has been an Ovation Finance production. Thanks for listening to the Financial Wellbeing Podcast. More interesting than you might think.